Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Topi Jana Vala Bangiri Varadari. Topi Jana Vala Bangiri Varadari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yamuna Tira Vachari. Yamuna Tira Vachari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kishor Kishore Jaya Kishor Kishore Jaya Kishor Kishore Jaya Kishor Kishore Jaya Jai Jagannath Jaya Jai Jagannath Jaya Jai Baladev Jaya Jai Subhadra Nittai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nittai Gaura Haribo. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Parivyagacharya Asatara Sata Shri Srimati's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Hom Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Parivyagacharya Asatara Sata Shri Srimati's Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Kauti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Srimad Bhaktam Grantaraj Ki Jai All glories to the assemble of devotees All glories to the assemble of devotees All glories to the symbol of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, Chapter 11, entitled The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, verses 46 through 49. 49. Krishna Mahabhaka Grastam Vishtvaramadaya Bhakkaha Vabhuvur Indriyai Niva Vina Pranam Vichetashaha Krishna Mahabhaka Grashtam Rishtvaramadaya Bhakkaha Vabhuvur Indriyai Niva Vina Pranam Vichetashaha. One more time. Krishna Mahabhaka Grashtam Rishtvaramadaya Bhakaha Vabhuvur Indriyaya Niva Vina Pranam Vichetashaha. Krishna Mahabhaka Grashtam Rishtvaramadayor Bhakaha Vabhuvur Indriyaya Niva Vina Pranam Vichetashaha. Word by word translation. Krishnam, unto Krishna. Mahabhaka Grashtam, swallowed by the great duck. Drishtva, seeing this incident. Rama Adayah Arbakaha, all the other boys headed by Balaram. Babhuvuhu became overwhelmed in Driani. Senses, Eva, like, Vina, without, Pranam, life, Vicheta Shaha, very much bewildered, almost unconscious. Translation. I think I'll just read a translation of all the verses so we get the flow. Translations of verses 46 through 49. One day, all the boys, including Krishna and Balaram, each boy taking his own group of calves, brought the calves to a reservoir of water, desiring to allow them to drink. After the animals drank water, the boys drank water there also. Verse 47, translation. Right by the reservoir, the boys saw a gigantic body resembling a mountain peak, broken and struck down by the thunderbolt. They were afraid even to see such a huge living being. Verse 48. The great body demon was named Bakasura. He assumed the body of a duck with a very sharp beak. Having come there, he immediately swallowed Krishna. And 49, that we just chanted in Sanskrit. When Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic duck, they became almost unconscious, like senses without life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Although Balaram can do everything, because of intense affection for his brother, he was momentarily bewildered. A similar thing is stated to have happened in connection with Rukmini Harana, the kidnapping of Rukmini. When Krishna, after kidnapping Rukmini, was attacked by all the kings, Rukmini was momentarily bewildered until the Lord took the proper steps. Thank you for coming today in this cold weather, coming back. We appreciate your attendance in this Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are continuing the chapter Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, and these verses nicely describe how Krishna and the cowherd boys were taking care of the calves and how they loved the animals. It says there that they let the animals drink water first and then they drank. So this gives us an example of how we on earth can, how our society can take care of the animals. They are so valuable, and not just meant for human consumption. Reading also about the boys who observed another demon, Bakasura, right? Bakasura was his name. A great duck with a sharp beak. He was there on the bank of the river, and he swallowed Krishna right away. Lots of demons in Canto 10. Krishna is taking care of all of them. Whenever he would go to lunch, he would take care of at least one demon in those times. Not a problem for Krishna. But reading a little bit further, we can read in the verse that when the boys realized that Krishna was devoured, they became almost unconscious, like senses without life. So I was reading this verse 49 and going between the purport and the verse and trying to get some kind of a starting point for this class. And this sentence, the second part of the sentence, stuck in my mind and my heart. So the boys became almost unconscious, like senses without life, because they realized that maybe Krishna will be gone forever. Maybe he won't be with us anymore. Obviously, these are pure devotees displaying those pastimes. It's quite a different thing than it is for us practicing devotees. Those feelings are different. They are conducted on completely pure devotional platform of devotional service. So I was moved by this sentence somehow, and I'll ask myself this question: how would that make me feel if Krishna did not exist? If I realized that there is no more Krishna, and someone said, "Oh, you know, these scriptures and Srila Prabhupada builds all like a story," and then Srila Prabhupada would come and say, "Told us, you know, there is no Krishna, it's a story." How would that make me feel, like that Krishna will be gone forever from my life, after all of the practice that I've done and all the good experience? How would that make me feel, that Krishna is going to be gone, and it's just going to be us in this material world? So I was like exploring this. Possibility or this mood, like what, how would that make me feel if that was to happen? So in this class, I would like to explore, focus on this scenario of, can this world exist without Krishna, without his presence? What it is like, maybe, and then at the end, after exploring it, how great it is that Krishna will never leave us and he'll always be with us forever. First of all, when I was exploring this concept of the possibility of non-existence of God, I was really my mind was twisting and turning. It didn't feel great to try to imagine this kind of philosophical concept, like that there is no God. It was hard for my mind to attempt to grasp it. It's much easier to accept that there is God, at least in my experience. Because with this, what we have, if there's superior control and the superior manager, the Father, someone who gives directions, we can have those directions. We can aspire to the service from the manager, from the Father, from the perfect master, and we have a manual for how to live. We have goals that we can set. But without the existence of God, and that's precisely what much of the society is trying to do, trying to put God out of the question, and that he doesn't really count. Unless they see God in front of them, why should we worry about God, you know? So that's the tendency in Kali Yuga. However, my mind didn't want to accept it, and it was a very nice feeling that, yes, if there's no God, how can we manage ourselves? What kind of rules and regulations and goals can we set for ourselves? Materialists can say that, yeah, we can come up with our own morality, we can come up with our own rules and goals. Yes, you can, but the experience shows, even if you're scientifically inclined, empirical evidence shows that our senses are not perfect. One theory after another is proven false, or they're improving the theory. Okay, it used to be like this, but now it's like this plus this. And then the next day, someone comes up with some better evidence, and this theory is nullified. So we can set our theories and rules and goals without God, but the problem is that we have four fallacies, four human tendencies, four faults basically that human beings possess, and basically all living entities in the universe. We have imperfect senses, we commit mistakes, we like to cheat if there's a possibility, the tendencies we want to cheat, you know, play tricks on others and make our way, get our way, and we have a tendency to be an illusion. I was trying to explain to my son the other day, because he was learning in school something. He says, you know, the sun is bigger than the moon and the earth. He was trying to tell me what he learned in school. So then I wanted to make a point to him that, yes, you can see everything through the telescope and everything, but listen, if you just believe your eyes, look at the sun, take a coin, take a quarter, and try to place it against the sun, and you will see that the coin will cover the sun. So in a way, you can if you believe your eyes 100%, you will know that the quarter somehow is bigger than the sun. But you learn from school and from TV and from books that actually this is not so, because you have a little bit expanded vision. So I was trying to explain to him that the senses are not perfect, and you have to believe the authority. So even though we can explore so many things and set so many goals and see so many things, observe so many things with our eyes and process them with our brain, and we have limitations, and we commit mistakes. People commit mistakes in the scientific world, in our world, you know, daily, day-to-day basis, we commit mistakes. You forget things and you assume things and things don't work out the way they're supposed to based on your assumptions. I'm sure you have many examples. I don't have to give you examples for that. We become illusioned. The illusion may be more gross and more subtle. There are different types of illusion, but we become illusioned. We try to believe in our own strength and power. We believe in the power of science. We believe in the power of this and that. And there are different types of beliefs that make us feel that, yes, we have control over this material creation. We have control over our lives. And we can set our own rules. We can build our own empires. And we protect ourselves. So this is a type of illusion, because if you explore it, you can see that our rules are not perfect and our empires are not perfect. You know, we build them, they crumble, they get damaged, destroyed. You have seen many from history. You can learn about many different empires. They tried to preserve, protect themselves, and they were great at one point, and at one point they were gone. Someone else came and conquered them. So the perfect management system is the one that is given to us from the Supreme Source, from the Supreme Father, the Supreme Creator and Controller, the perfect manual. A very good example that Srila Prabhupada gives is about the manual. If you have a product on the market, like a computer, a new computer, or new something, whatever, there is a manual that comes with the product. And then if you buy it, you're the purchaser and you're the user. It comes with that manual, and if you have questions, you should first read the manual and then try to operate the device, the instrument. And if you have more questions, you cannot understand the manual, then you call the number that's on the manual, 1-800, whatever the product is, and then they will answer your questions directly. So a similar system works in the material sphere. You go to authorities, and for ultimate goal setting and ultimate management of our lives, the manual is the Vedas that are revealed and this, you know, coming down from our parampara, the lineage of teachers, from teacher to student, student to teacher, and ultimately from Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 17 through 18, that I am the father of this universe, the mother, the refuge, the shelter, the ultimate abode, the basis of everything, the resting place. So it'll be a hard project to, that's what's actually happening in this world today, to manage this world without the existence of God, without admitting that God is there, without taking shelter of His instructions. And you can see people are trying to artificially rule and conduct themselves without the necessity of God, the existence of God. And you can see how many problems we have in our society these days. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. If you want to be scared and don't have a good night's rest, watch the news and then or hear it from others. Point number two that I'd like to mention is that once you don't have this manual for perfect conduct in your life, for leading our life the right way, then we cannot have meaning in life. If you don't have ultimate goals and rules that come from someone higher, something higher, then you cannot have meaning. And then I remember in school, years and years ago, I read this book. There's no ultimate meaning, you cannot have happiness. There was this book, Man's Search for Meaning. I think it was in psychology or American literature. We had to read it by Viktor Frankl. Anyway, the idea was that if you don't have faith that goes beyond this material realm, beyond your experience, if you don't have faith in the Supreme, you may call your Supreme any name that's authorized, then you will not be able to withstand the life's challenges. You'll be crushed. The material world will crush you and you'll be defeated, ultimately. You won't have that strength. Strength comes from those instructions and it gives us meaning in life. And from that action, based on the bona fide rules and the value and the meaning that we have, that we feel in our hearts, comes happiness in action. These days we have this trend's been going on for years and years, and people are searching for meaning. So they try to set different goals and try to find meaning in life. Sometimes when I was about to go to school, I think it was like college. I think that was new to me, because where I come from Europe, they didn't have those type of counselors. But when I would go to school and I wasn't sure what to do, I wasn't sure what classes should I take or what's going to be my major, you have a counselor, you set an appointment with a counselor, and then the counselor will talk to you, explore things, and then present what the classes are, what the departments are, and then you have a sense of direction and sense of meaning. You have goals. Okay, I'm going to take these classes and I'm going to work to learn these subject matters, and I'm going to, and that's why I have goals and I have meaning and I feel happy because I have those goals. So similarly in general in life and in spiritual life, it is very good to set your goals for the material sphere of your life and for the spiritual sphere of your life. And it is best if those goals are set by the scriptures, by the superiors, by someone who is authorized, who's not just making up ideas about, or even worse, you know, let our own mind, based on our flimsy mind, set our goals, and on our impure desires, if we set those goals, we'll be frustrated in the end. And there won't be happiness. So perfect management of our affairs here in the material world and also in spiritual life comes from accepting the scriptures and the system that God gave us. And that gives us meaning, and ultimate happiness. Another point that I like to address is, like, if there's no God, and we don't have the perfect system to live our lives, if we don't have the meaning, and we're not happy, we also cannot have any retain any good character. You know, we may pretend to be moral or strong, but a very little thing can throw us off balance. We can read some scriptures, also stories in the scriptures. I'm not sure if they're perfect examples for this, but you know, there are many powerful personalities who denied the existence of God, and they want to have their own kingdom, and ultimately they ended up being very frustrated at a very little, very small reason, very petty reason. They would get upset and destroy things around. And we can see in Kali Yuga, in this age, we have some many demons, but they're demons nevertheless. You can watch on TV, and if you don't have to, don't watch. But I hear this from many people all the time. Did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? Oh, you know, this happened. Everything's on the news. Sometimes on Saturdays I go to this class with my son for play tennis, and they have a big TV, big screen TV, so I'm trying to watch my son, how he plays the tennis. But then there's a big screen TV and the news, what's going on, and it's very loud too, so you can hear it anyway, what's going on. And so there's always, in my experience, always, every time I go there, the news are there's some serial killer or some murder was committed. And sometimes the reasons are, oh, you know, they caught him and they said, oh, you know, this, he said this and that, and I, you know, I was provoked and then I killed him. So sometimes, many times people are very unfortunate, they cannot retain, they cannot develop good character, and little reason, a petty reason, someone says something, you get upset to a point where you kill other people, not only abuse them verbally, but also kill them. So this is our character. When we are not strengthened from within, and we don't develop genuine qualities of character, our life will be very destructive and unhappy, and we just hurt other people unnecessarily. So these are the three things that I would like to mention, that I mentioned. The management system is not perfect without God. We don't have meaning. We don't have true happiness, and we cannot retain, develop good character without God in control. So I'm thinking that it would be so awful and unacceptable not to have Krishna, Lord Krishna, God, for with us every day. We can always wake up in the morning, you know, pay your obeisances, you know, take a shower, pay your obeisances, and do some chanting, do some bhajans. You wake up and you already have a goal, you know, you give your heart to God. And then you go to work and try to give the fruits of your work to God. And you try to, you know, be with your friends, be with your family throughout the day, and in that spirit that, you know, they're also servants of God, and they just stay together as a team, work towards this common goal, and the day goes by very pleasantly. Not always, but it's much more pleasant than having a different scenario where you don't start your day like this. You just wake up, grab a cup of coffee, turn on the TV, the latest news, you know, you don't take a shower, don't take a shower, depends on how much time you have, and then just jump in the car and speed, someone cuts you off, you swear and gesture to them, and hopefully you won't get in an accident. Go to work, keep drinking that coffee, unhealthy lunch, and you have and you're very stressed. It's another way to live, and it's not very happy. But people do not have the knowledge and strength to look elsewhere and be convinced that indeed, if you have your supreme goal and you have your rules and day that revolves around God, then the day is so much more pleasant. You actually can even enjoy material life more as a byproduct. That's not the goal, but it just happens automatically. So it would be Krishna is the ultimate goal in life that we strive for. He gives us the eternal occupation and directions to follow, like he says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9. Like I mentioned earlier, he's the refuge, the protector, the mother, the father, the sustenance, you know, everything. But I was also asking myself questions. I was exploring this scenario of what it would be like to not have God, and that I'm very uncomfortable with this idea. I don't know how I could live without this concept and the service that I'm trying to do every day. You know, do a little bit of chanting, a little bit of reading, go to work for Krishna. So I was thinking, why Why am I not very sad when I miss a Temple Sunday Feast program? I'm uncomfortable, but did I miss it because of work and family obligations? I'm not very unhappy. So that made my mind very... I was exploring this idea. Here, the pure devotees there, they became almost unconscious. And I accepted theoretically that I'm not very comfortable with not having Krishna in my life. But then, if I miss the temple, if I don't finish my chanting in the morning, somehow I'm not crying. I'm not devastated. I'm just, I'll make up later. I will do a better job tomorrow. I'll make up the rounds, or I will maybe finish by midnight if I have enough energy. I feel some discomfort, but it's not devastating me. I'm not crying. I'm not very unhappy. If I miss the temple program because of some external material duties, similarly, I'm not devastated. Well, I missed seeing the devotees. I missed seeing the deities. And that gave me something to think about. Like, I would like to be maybe show more gratitude and appreciations for the practice that we're doing, the bhakti yoga, the chanting, being with devotees. And more appreciation. But there's something in the heart, something that's... that prevents many devotees from feeling that very strong emotion when there is no Krishna. They're not maybe very desperate and unhappy. It's just a little discomfort. That's my experience, at least. So what is to be done? And then what is that thing that's stopping us from feeling that genuine emotion for Krishna? Why are we not so strict, and why are we not so devoted as we should be? So I would call it in psychological terms your emotional set point. You're set at a certain level. You can call it your conditioning based on the gunas, your conditioning that you bring with you. Because of your former life, either in this life or previous life, we bring some conditioning with us, and there's some emotional set point that it's hard to go beyond. You can call it conditioning by the three gunas, or in psychological terms they call it emotional set point, and it's very hard to get beyond it sometimes. And we have a limited range of thoughts and feelings that they were capable of at that point that we're stuck at. And hopefully in some future lectures or classes, I would like to maybe explore this idea of having a set emotional point and not being able to go beyond it as it relates to spiritual life. So I can hopefully explore it in the future classes at one point. Maybe zoom in on this a little bit. But for now, I'd like to just express my gratitude for being able to be here and speak a little bit about Krishna, and to all of our gurus and devotees, express my gratitude for letting me speak and do some kind of service. Thank you very much, and I welcome any questions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you, Arjunacharya Prabhu.
Sure.
Just reflecting a little bit on the point that you highlighted in terms of how will be life without Krishna or God, And then yesterday, I was giving a class at the Bhakti Loft, and I have two young men, and one of them was this very nice young man that was sort of interested, but you can see he had, you know, a particular, what my spiritual master says, you know, they're poisoned with impersonalism.
Wow.
So, because many of them that are searching, they become exposed to,
right,
to this impersonal philosophy, Mayavadi philosophy, you know, full-fledged Mayavadi philosophy. So, nice boy, respectful, but in the class yesterday was, we call it sacred dialogues. So it's more that, you know, you take a particular part of the Gita and then break it down and discuss.
Sure.
So it was a discussion, and, you know, it became clear that he was very confused, and he came out, and, you know, I didn't necessarily push the issue that, you know, to make him see that, but, you know, he was making very good points. But then he came to this, in as he started to express himself, that in the beginning, if that, you know, how fortunate he feels that he is in a path of spirituality, and, you know, and he's really into, and he really feels that has been in changing his life, you know, in terms of recognizing who he is, and who is, he's not the body, he is a soul, he is a spirit.
Right.
So that whole thing is quite fine, until as he started to, you know, in the matter of the discussion, it came out that he's actually very confused, because it comes the part of how to put these two together, a life in which everything that we experience in this world is non-existent, it's an illusion. So everything, this body, name, everything that we talk, books, everything is an illusion.
Okay.
So that at the end, there is, you know, the spiritual reality, and everything material is an illusion, which is a Mayavadi philosophy.
Right.
You know, what is it that Brahman Nitya Jagat Nitya, that the world is an illusion, the reality is the spiritual reality. So so then he was saying, how can you live happily? You know, that's something that he has a problem, that, you know, denying this world and the contribution that can you do in this world, then he finds this difficulty to put, you know, to deny this that is, doesn't exist. So I was just thinking, okay, life without accepting that there is a, and then also he speaks about love. So there's this confusion. I say, but love means two.
Right.
It's not just one. You know, you have to have a beloved, an object of love, to be able to speak about love.
Right.
So, so life without that relationship with God is very confusing. It's very, you can be settled and satisfied and happy because you don't find there is an organized system, as you said. So just adding to that, I mean, eventually I brought up, we discussed some of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita, and then, you know, in which there is a sense that you have to balance matter and spirit, and there is a system, given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhakti scriptures that help us do that, that
right.
allow us to do that. And you say, oh, I can relate to that. You know, it's coming along.
Sure,
but
that's good.
The part of that confusion and that unsettledness of not having a concept of God or having a concept of personal God, because the Maya, the impersonal is
right.
they think God is the energy, impersonal energy.
Huh.
Or the absolute truth is an energy, but a personal...
Right.
Don't, not having that is very disconcerting and...
It's confusing.
And confusing and, you know...
Wow.
Type of thing.
I'm glad you're doing a lot of preaching there. So people are coming and we're doing our best to, you know, give them the love that we have, and if they're not attracted by philosophy, they'd be attracted by the love that we give them, you know. You know, we do our best, whatever we can do. Was there like a specific question about that, or just a comment, your experience? Wow, thank you for your comment. It's very nice. Very nice that people are coming who may benefit, go a level higher, you know, go to... Maybe sooner or later he'll be, you know, personalist. Maybe he'll be doing bhakti yoga. Mm. He's getting that credit now, so. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Manjaka alpadaruj jai. Kripa sindhu vezavet jai. Yonkavanevi vaishnavi namanamana.